Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Christensen. Always want to remind you guys, go check out reallifepharmacology.com. Go ahead and subscribe to our email list, and I will get you a 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. So definitely go check that out absolutely for free, simply for signing up for our email list and when we have new podcasts and products and things of that nature. So definitely go check that out, and let's get into the drug of the day. And we are talking Cholestipol. Brand name of this medication is Cholestid, and this medication is classified as a drug that can lower cholesterol levels. More specifically, its classification is a bile acid sequestrant. Now, I have talked about cholestyramine, I believe, in a previous podcast, and that mechanism is similar. So, cholestipol binds bile acid in the gut. And if you remember, cholesterol, more specifically LDL, and bile acid can essentially bind up each other or are bound together in the gut. So when cholestipol binds up bile acid, it also can take with it cholesterol and LDL and things of that nature. And that's ultimately eliminated through the feces, and then reabsorption isn't possible back into systemic circulation. So that's the main mechanism by which it lowers cholesterol there. Now, in clinical practice, do I see this medication used for cholesterol? Not very often. We've got so much better evidence, data with statin therapy, effectiveness as well. So in most situations, you're probably going to see a statin first. You're probably going to see ezetimibe in, you know, or maybe our higher risk patients, secondary prevention, things like that. And then maybe down the line as a further option, you might see cholestipol. But I can tell you, it doesn't get utilized very often for its cholesterol purposes. In geriatrics, in my patient population, I would say I probably see cholestipol used more often off-label for management and symptoms of chronic diarrhea, where we can't figure out any identifiable treatable cause. So I've definitely seen it used off-label for that purpose periodically, which kind of can tell you a little bit about the potential adverse effect profile in its ability to cause constipation if we're potentially using it off-label to manage diarrhea there. Other adverse effects, GI upset, cramping, GI symptoms are basically going to be the major concerns, major common patient complaints. Rarely there's been associations with acidosis, elevations in LFTs, also potentially myopathy as well. Maybe more so likely in a patient who's taking this medication in combination with a statin. It is important to recognize that cholestipol is not meant to bring down triglycerides. And in fact, there's some evidence that says we should not use this medication if a patient has triglycerides greater than 300, and that's from ACC/AHA statement. I think it was a couple years ago now. So with that, cholestipol can actually increase triglycerides, which is definitely something we don't want to do, especially in a patient that may be towards the higher end already. So important to remember that fact about it. Dietary considerations before we get into to drug interaction specifically definitely needs to be mentioned. If you've got a patient at risk, you know, for poor nutrition, maybe they don't eat right, maybe, you know, they've got a history of alcoholism, something along those lines, this drug can reduce absorption of certain fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, E, and vitamin K. So important to remember that. Folic acid is also another one. So keep that in mind. In a patient that's eating well overall, you know, otherwise normal, other than maybe elevated cholesterol or diarrhea, you know, they're probably going to be okay. But if we're using this medication over a long period of time, and maybe they've got some other risk factors for poor nutrition, that may be a patient a little more at risk for some of those vitamin deficiencies. Lab monitoring routinely, we're probably not going to do too much there other than lipids if we're using it for cholesterol purposes. In the event we're using it to manage diarrhea, you may check some labs based upon the symptoms of diarrhea, but for the drug itself, you might not do much routine monitoring there. All right, so let's take a quick break, and we will come back with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study materials, definitely go check out our growing list of resources at meded101.com/store. We've also got Audible book promotions where if you've never used an Audible book, never tried an Audible book, they will give you your first one for free. So definitely click on the audiobooks links at meded101.com/store, and you can get your first one for free, whether that's a book on common drug interactions, pharmacotherapy case studies, or The Thrill of the Case, another basically add-on secondary book to pharmacotherapy with lots of similar clinical pearls, education, great stuff for, you know, new practitioners, physicians, nurse practitioners, just to learn about medication management and the thought process of managing, changing, altering medications. So definitely go check out those resources. Lots of different stuff for all different folks at meded101.com/store, STORE. All right, so let's finish up on drug interactions and cholestipol. It's simple but complicated, okay? So simple in the aspect of there are a lot of, complex in the aspect of there are a lot of potential drug interactions, but simple in the fact that they're all basically through the same pathway. So binding interactions are very common with cholestipol, but there's a lot of them. So, you know, digoxin, amiodarone, I mentioned, you know, the risk of reducing vitamin absorption. Corticosteroids, there's some diuretics interactions where concentrations can be reduced, thyroid medications, of course, and that's not the total extensive list, but just to give you an idea, if you ever see this medication used, you've got to recognize that there's probably going to be a potential for binding drug interactions, and go through that patient's medication list, make sure they aren't on any, you know, drugs with a narrow therapeutic index, and also keep in mind that we may have a clinical non-response if we knock those concentrations down of a particular drug by cholestipol binding them up. So keep tabs on that. Definitely a lot of binding drug interactions. In most situations, I would say we can get away with timing the drug appropriately. So what you would generally do is time other medications before cholestipol. So maybe an hour or two before you take the cholestipol, you take all your other medications. That way it gives the body some time to absorb those drugs and make sure that patients are getting their adequate and consistent dose. If you're doing it after, generally we have to wait a lot longer because that cholestipol is going to be in the gut. It's going to be hanging around. And generally that time frame is 4 to 6 hours after the dose of cholestipol to, again, give those other medications to try to avoid or minimize the potential for those binding interactions. So can be a little bit tricky there to avoid those interactions. Kind of another reason why this medication isn't used terribly often because of those purposes. And then from an additive adverse effect profile, I definitely think that when I see cholestipol, it's one of those medications that can contribute to constipation. So if you do happen to be using it for cholesterol management, and you see a patient's on opioids, anticholinergics, maybe even something like calcium channel blocker, definitely could have an additive effect towards constipation. So something we need to educate our patients about, including, you know, educating about fiber and fluid intake and things of that nature. All right, so I think that's going to wrap it up for today. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, definitely leave us a rating review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Greatly appreciated. Share us with a friend on Instagram or Facebook, Twitter, whatever social media platform you utilize. That's also greatly appreciated. If you've got an email list of classmates that you think in your pharmacology class, for example, that you think could benefit from the podcast, definitely don't hesitate to share our free resource with those folks as well. Again, you can sign up, get that 31-page PDF, good little study guide on the top 200 drugs at reallifepharmacology.com. And definitely go support our sponsor, meded101.com/store. You can track me down on meded101.com or LinkedIn are probably the two best ways to do that. Definitely don't hesitate to let me know any suggestions, questions, concerns. I do my best to answer all them. I do get quite a few, but definitely suggestions I look at on an individual basis and obviously try to make this podcast better and more applicable to what you're doing as a healthcare professional. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you guys take care and have a great rest of your day.